Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. Didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy.
Well, let's make Section Tax. I'm Scott Tom Howard. Ricardo on the board, SP Futures. Hey, imagine that. We're up 17. NASDAQ Futures up 75. We're up every day now, which is, we're on our run to the convention or something here. We're doing something. But it's good for, certainly good for clients. It's good for, plus we had, we have a lot of people that are still involved in some of the gold stocks, and for whatever reason, they took off yesterday. So it was a great day for the good kids. So I mean, that's a good thing. I'm not sure why all of a sudden they've had gold racing this morning up $40, $23.80. But the gold miners have not participated so much. And all of a sudden, they're starting to. And who knows if that'll continue or not? But like I said, we'll take a good day when we get one. Do we have a Professor Kevin?
You do. Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I am living the dream every single day of my life.
Well, you sort of
Actually,
are.
Actually, it's graduation day, so I'll be at a graduation ceremony tonight.
Are you gonna wear the big outfit?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have your own?
Or
you
faculty is expected to be there, and yes, we do. We are there in full regalia.
Now, do you rent that thing, or you have one, or what do you do?
I own it. I bought it.
Well, you don't have to worry about like growing out of those things, do you?
Too much. No. The only thing you got to worry about is does it need to go to the cleaners this year, or is it still good from last year?
Still good from a decade ago.
Yeah, about that.
How many tassels do you throw on yours? Are you one of those kind of guys?
No, I just one tassel.
What do you got to do to get like 10 tassels? I want to have 10 tassels.
Well, it's honors cords that you get.
Well, can't you buy them?
You can wear an honors cord around your. Around your neck if you want. I don't bother with any of that.
I bet you can get those on Canal Street in New York like everything else.
You probably can. I actually, you know, there's one that I could wear if I wanted to.
What do you guys like? Whenever Hesburger go to one of these things, you have a bunch of stuff on. What does all that mean? It was like you're like being a general.
Yeah, you know how they, if you get an honorary PhD and they drape it kind of around, you know, over you, all of those are keepers, so you can keep them if you want.
Ah. Oh, who's going to give us an honorary PhD?
Me? Probably, you know, there's probably people beating down the door to do it. You, on the other hand, you ain't getting one.
Well, that's the truth, boy. It's been an interesting week, though, arguing amongst ourselves, the people on the show. We can't wait till Tuesday to debate Hal about his views on the what's going on in NIL stuff in colleges. You know, it's funny when you actually, and I don't consider myself a real economist because I'm in like the business world more than anything else. Plus, I don't know. Well, I guess I got an undergraduate degree. Does that count? I don't know. Anyway, but it's pretty interesting how if you have the, and I don't really want to accuse Hal of this because he certainly doesn't. But once in a while, even the guys at the University of Chicago, they'd lean back in the chair and they'd drop into tenured professor mode, if there is such a thing. They go, well, boys, you know, in 40 years, this will all equal out economically. And you go, 40 years is a hell of a long time. Maybe it's okay for you getting your tenured professor check, but a lot of other people are going to rise and fall.
Yeah, you might like it. I turned 70 this year. I'm not projecting out 40 years.
No. Well, you might. Well, you know, who knows? We're doing better than a lot of 70-year-old people when we were young. So.
I'm probably ornery enough to not deny.
That's the truth, but this whole thing going on in football is not it's not economics as we know it. And Hal and I always are debating is, you know, he's an Austrian economist, which is actually very similar to being kind of a libertarian economist.
Well, he was born like in Idaho.
Well, yeah, I know, but he's the Austrian school of economics is the one he likes.
Nice.
So, but, which is really very libertarian, which is actually almost stone cold word for word Milton Friedman, even though they probably don't admit it. But it's exactly, if you actually read his books on capitalism and economic freedom and those kinds of things, that's exactly what Hal's talking about. I don't know if Hal read one in his sleep and didn't know it or whatever, but it's exactly, so it's almost word for word. But anyway, in that situation, the market, the economy will always take care of stuff and it will always equalize out over time, which has been proven, I think, to be false because they underestimated the power of some central governments to stay there year after year, decade after decade, and kind of screw with the economic process. But it will tell you stuff like if some firm over time, you know, beats up on labor to the point where, you know, labor can go other places, they'll eventually have to compete. I don't know that they necessarily realize how like a tick on the dog a place like Commonwealth Edison can be for like 150 years. If you're a tenured economist, you might say, give them another 150 and it'll be competitive. Well, that's fine. But in the meantime, those guys have done pretty well for 150 years and people have gotten overcharged, right? You know what I'm saying, Kevin? They're probably right in the long run. But how long is the long run? You know, the end of the earth or what? But this whole thing with college sports, I don't care what economist you are, I've never seen anything like this to where, I mean, and Hal's point is, yes, there was too much money there. Eventually, it was going to spill over to the players in some way or form. And to some extent, going way back 50 years, the players all, not all, but some managed to get a little bit here and there and so forth, and it's just a matter of degree. I think that's so far from the left field, because it's not an economy. Economy right now, as anybody can even define it, there's no way that people from the outside, you know, if you were an alumni, and you even talk to a recruit, you're liable to get banned and the school get fined. Now you can give the kid a check. It's if it was just the schools paying him, I think Hal would be correct. You know, it finally broke out to where they're going to have to pay these kids and so forth. But they're not paying them. It's a totally upside-down world. I don't think there's ever been a book written that even describes anything like that. Do you know of one?
No, but I don't think it's going to last this way forever. And I don't, because it's just not rational and it's not manageable. What, you know, the problem that you have with it is that the floodgates got opened and, you know, this didn't happen on a step-by-step basis, on a glide path of any kind, or anything like that. And that's, you know how I feel about that. I hold the NCAA totally responsible for it.
I don't know if they ever could control it.
They fought it rather than reading the situation, and they fought it, and when they lost, it was over, and it was over suddenly.
This
is the classic example of gradually and then suddenly.
I'm going to push back a hair on that. NCAA, really, Kevin, in our lifetime, has steadily lost power to the football programs. I mean, they managed to really spank some of them, like Southern Cal when you and I got out of school and those kinds of things. But over time, the money has taken them over. When we were out of school for a while, when what's his name, the guy who went to Tampa Bay, was it McKay, left Southern Cal. They got spanked to the point where they couldn't be on TV for what was it, a year or two? Because I this is what it's talking about.
Yeah,
remember,
Oklahoma State was a classic example of that, because when they had Barry Sanders, the first time Barry Sanders was seen on TV and as a college player, despite winning the Heisman Trophy, was his bowl game as a senior. But they used to control TV rights until they lost in court, and then it was all of a sudden, yeehaw, open season on TV, and the world changed, and it changed abruptly. In that case, it didn't matter as much to us as consumers, because you know, most of the status quo prevailed, and we just got to see more games.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is they lost out to, I don't know if you want to say it's the conferences, the schools, or you can just throw the euphemism up there, and they lost out to big money. There's no way that the NCAA is going to ban Alabama from being on football when ESPN's paid for those rights. It's just not going to happen. They're going to say, wait a minute, you're one of the top three teams in the country every year I can't put on TV. What's the matter with that?
Plus, they don't have control over the football rights anymore. So it's not, you know, they can't claim that it's their business. The only thing where they own the broadcast rights is the NCAA basketball tournament.
But, I mean, you could shut...
Perhaps the, other NCAA tournaments.
But I'm saying they could shut the Alabama program down if they wanted to. I don't know if they can anymore, but I'm saying they've steadily lost power. But I guess where I'm going with this, Kevin, is I don't know that your model is going to be the one either, that they're just going to... Here's where I'm coming with this. And you tell me I'm goofy. You'd like to do it anyway. There was a time, one night I was... actually, twice I did. I went to one of those Notre Dame functions, and I was fortunate enough through Tom Tully, a friend. He knew George Conner and Ziggy Zarabsky and all those old guys from Chicago, Johnny Latner. And we'd go out to the bar afterward, and I was young. And we'd go out, and I sat next to George Conner. And George Conner was telling me, Tom, you know how many surgeries I've had since I left football? And I said, boy, George, I don't want to make a stab. It was either 22 or 27. You know, on fingers and whatever, you name it, knees. And he goes, I now one of them.
Shoulders, knees, and toes?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, wherever you can have one. Plus, they did it so loud.
We've got to make that the next bumper music.
Yeah, well, plus in those days, if you never had one knee surgery, the guy screwed it up, you had like five or six on that knee by the time somebody...
Oh, yeah, and they were cutting, too.
They were cutting, too.
They were cutting.
And he said not one of them was paid for by the Bears or Notre Dame. He goes, this isn't right. this is 30 years ago, he's telling me this. And so I don't know, Kevin, when you have... This is the fly in the ointment. Of where you think they're going, and you're probably right, but somehow or another, the schools are going to end up paying these people, and they're going to again tell the boosters to pound sand and get the hell out of there, and that, you know, everybody's can't hand kids checks and stuff, and it's not going to be these big places that you give them money and you work in a hospital or some BS, but somehow or another, the schools are just going to straighten this out and they're going to pay people. Now you got to worry about, well, this sport makes money. So we're going to pay people more there, even though another scholarship athlete might be on the women's fencing team or the guys' soccer team. We're not going to pay them anything. And now this NCAA's Congress has got a problem with that. I mean, there's problems all along the way here. But the thing that I don't, if you don't have a union, and I'll say this on the air, if you don't have a union stupid enough to essentially bargain away like the NFL, bargain away people's long-term health benefits for current income, like they did, all these kids that have this DT, whatever it is, and all these other things, when they're older and they only played college ball, all that stuff is going to start dumping itself on the university. And I'm telling you, if I'm on the board of the university, I want no part of that, Kevin. No part of that as something going forward. I don't want Notre Dame having 50 lawsuits 10 years from now because people are croaking because they played football or have to be taken care of in an institution. You can't go there. And if there's no union that says, that's okay, give us a lump sum and everything's all right, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't think that that's a winner. I don't.
Okay, so how I think it will unfold is I think the next step is you will have, and I think Lou mentioned this too, and you were just arguing over the number, whether it's 40 or 64, you'll have a group of major football schools, major football conferences who will break away from the NCAA. They will do that in part because they do want to put the players on the payroll, because that way they can control, they can seize control back on player movement. Okay, so that's going to be the driving force. The coaches hate the status quo in terms of all the players that leave them. They love to be able to grab them from other schools, but they don't like them. They don't like them leaving. It's not manageable for them.
You're talking word for word. 30 years ago, Rick Tellender's book, where he thought it was going. By the way, he agrees with you. It's going to be professional, college sponsored professional teams.
Yes.
Now, okay. Why?
Let's not stop there. So what's going to happen? Well, the players are going to want some of their movement. They kind of like the ability to move. In fact, you know, we're dealing with lawsuits right now. That's why that's why nobody has to sit out at the moment, even if it's the second transfer, because there's a restraining order while they hear a lawsuit about that it's restricting their ability to earn. Because if you can't move for a better NIL deal, then they're restricting your ability to earn a living. So with the restrictions on movement, so that'll get hurt. What's going to happen is the courts may decide some of that. Some of that may be that the players organize and start their own players association, union, whatever you want to call it, and then they will collectively bargain for those rights. The schools may have the upper hand, may not. They've proved themselves to be pretty stupid so far when it comes to these kinds of matters. So I don't know what to expect of that, but I think that will be a natural next step. And all of this, and the only reason that the schools have any leverage at this point is because they're pretty much the only show in town for that age group.
Right.
And so ultimately, will something emerge like, you know, some models have? It's not big time yet, but some models have emerged with alternatives for basketball to alternatives to college that don't hurt. In fact, for some of the star players, actually helps their NBA draft prospects. So, you know, we will see. We will see how that unfolds. But it's going to be some kind of back and forth, you know, spy versus spy type of thing, for those old enough to remember Mad Magazine. There is going to be this thing, and it's going to take a lot of years for that to unfold. But I believe it will. And maybe it'll result in there's no such thing as college football anymore. They just get to a minor league football model. The problem is, and the reason, you know, the big appeal of college football is there is an emotional tie for a lot of people to either their home state university or to, you know, to their alma maters, you know, all of these kind of things. And that, you know, that seems to drive demand for the games as much as anything. And, you know, otherwise, you know, how does minor league sports do? Well, you know, it's kind of okay in some locales and not as okay in other locales, but it's not big time like college sports.
But if you keep slapping people in the face with how much different it is, eventually they're going to get the message. Even fans, dumb as fans are, and I'm one of them. Eventually, you're going to get the idea that. Why do I care about going to a Notre Dame game? These kids are no longer anywhere near close to the people I knew that played football.
I think you're already seeing more of that than the colleges would want to admit, and their marketing people would not want to admit to. But you know, look at you and I both know the Notre Dame model. It was always built around scarcity of tickets. A whole lot of people doing day trips,
yep,
from Chicago, from Indianapolis, from Grand Rapids, even Milwaukee, Ohio, and so on. So people could go to a game and still be home by, in some cases, dinner time, in some cases, by 9 or 10 o'clock, depending on whether they
stopped. Or you stopped for dinner on the way back, and I mean, it made those places happy and everybody was happy.
Yeah, and it worked out, and it worked really well for everybody. So, you know, that was the model. They changed it. They changed it because TV drove them into a lot more night games, late day start times, and so on. So they changed it, and you see now they don't sell out anymore. They have a sale to the general public, which they never used to have after all the alumni sales. There is no way. So they and where it kind of burned them is, you had to make a certain level of contribution just to get into the football ticket lottery, and then they'd conduct this computer lottery, and you know, you would say, well, I got three of my five requests or something like that, you know, and you know, people would get excited about that, which is crazy enough. So that was the model. Now that model doesn't fly. That particular incentive to give to Notre Dame is gone, because you don't need to do it to get your hands on tickets. There's going to be a general public sale, and you know, if you consider the face value of a ticket plus your contribution, Well, now you can just get a ticket for the face value of the ticket. Well, not worry about the contribution.
Well, they've made the experience by building around the stadium. I'm not saying this is wrong or right, but by building around the stadium, the parking has become a nightmare, where the parking pass costs three times as much as a ticket.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So now, so that's part of their revenue model. The other part of their revenue model is that now, because of night games and 3:30 starts and so on, you have people who are instead planning weekends. And so it is get the alumni to come back at least once a year from all parts, here and there, all over the place, all over the United States, in some cases all over the world. Come in for a football weekend, remember the good old days, et cetera. And that's all fine. So what happens is every local hotel charges, $400 a night with a two-night minimum. The local housing rental market booms over those weekends and so on. And that's how they sell tickets, because people don't want to book the trip unless they have tickets in hand. And so that's about the only way they get a major pre-sale on the tickets. Otherwise, nobody would buy them ahead of time. They're generally available. They're not sold out.
Well, you have, and it's always interesting when you have to sports people. And I can say this because I am one. Your eyes are diluted by the numbers. Because you're a sports fan, the numbers are, you're diluted by the numbers. All the idiots that I know are that think that we as a place should pay for the Bears Stadium so they can make $400 million a year instead of $200. I don't even know where that comes from, but it does. I
mean, well, Tom, we're paying for the culture and climate of the city.
Yeah, right. But I mean, everybody is convinced because of the model you have that yes, there's no question that if Nebraska all of a sudden were to get a really good team again, that probably you would get some people who would donate to get the best tickets there or donate to get the skybox, and would it on some level increase your contributions for a little while? I don't think there's any doubt that those guys are right, okay? Those guys, those girls, those people who think that way, that there's this massive connection between a major university now and somehow their football program. There is a connection. I will go with that. But if you look at the size these universities have become, you look at Northwestern, for instance. If they had a decent football program, maybe they could raise their ticket prices at the new stadium and blah, blah, blah. Somebody's paying for a stadium. And maybe you got some skyboxes and it become maybe a place to go. Who the hell knows? And yes, would some of that revenue go up? But if you take the revenue of the entire Northwestern University and the hospitals and the donations and the... It is a pimple on the ass of the biggest elephant on earth, whether or not you get 4 idiots to pay up for a skybox. On a total scale, I don't know that this, plus the more money you make, the more the coaches are going to get and everybody's going to use and everybody's going to have a private jet. None of those guys will ever take a regular plane to go see somebody, a high school kid. They got to be on a private jet. They will use up every penny. You and I know that, or every penny they're allowed to. They'll hire everybody in the world. There'll be 500 people working for the football department. Just the way the world is, if there's money laying around, right, Kevin?
Yeah, it's still a pretty big number, though. You're probably looking, at for the big games, the Ohio States and Southern California's and so on. Notre Dame's going to sell out the stadium. It's going to be a $10 million game.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then the parking, as you mentioned, is god-awful expensive, so they'll make a lot of money on that, and they'll make a lot of merchandising. And to the extent they have an investment in Eddy Street Commons, where some of the hotels are, then they'll make some revenue off of that. And you do that six times a year. It's not chump change. Is it the biggest part of their endowment and their investment portfolio and any of that? No.
But if all of a sudden, Kevin...
It's not trivial either.
But all of a sudden, one of these days, and I don't know why people don't do it, and I'm not encouraging it or anything, one of, I won't say he's a best friend, the guys I've known forever, a trader on the floor, grew up three blocks from me. His older brother just died of the mental disease thing. Now, he played for, I'm thinking either Marist, and he went to either like Holy Cross or Boston. Nobody, not Alabama or someplace. Now, I don't know that the family's not going to drop some multi-million lawsuit on that college. And what's their defense? He's not an employee? I mean, I don't want any part of that if I'm on the Northwestern board.
An extracurricular activity.
Yeah, it's an extra. I mean, you know, that even though we have supposedly a great court system here, don't you notice? I mean, you do because you put two and two together. As we try and do this on the show just to make people think, how can the same ignorant Supreme Court claim that a college kid that's getting a scholarship to play has the right for movement on his own, and yet Major League Baseball still has an antitrust exemption and you can't go anywhere for 50 years?
Well, the antitrust exemption and the collective bargaining agreement are two different but somewhat related things.
Well, I mean, the reason why you ended up with this skewed collective bargaining agreement is because of the antitrust exemption.
In part, yeah, I think so.
But I'm saying, how can a high school kid...
But you also have in part, you know, and you've mentioned this before, you have another piece of that where when the movement is somewhat restricted, the value of the guys who are eligible for movement is much higher.
Well, I'm saying...
And then in their case, by having arbitration to go with it, that gives them the ability to peg other salaries to the free agent salaries, and the free agent salaries are artificially high because of scarcity.
Without a doubt, Marvin Miller absolutely put one over on the owners, and the owners, because they want control, are willing to give up the economics of it, which is kind of crazy. But SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 71. Be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Low North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. SP Futures up 16. NASDAQ Futures up 74. Dow Futures up 92. Dow is pushing for an 8-day winning streak. Looks like maybe we're going to make it. We'll see. European markets rise to fresh record highs. UK exits recession. What could possibly be better? DAX up 84.4%. FTSE up 57.7%. CAC around up 54.7%. Is it what it said in the one movie? Don't pee on my shoes and tell me it's raining. Well, no, everything's great. Nikkei up 155.4%. Hang Seng up 425, 2.3%. That's a big move. 18,963. Gone are the days of ducking under 16,000. I mean, they're a long way from there. The Chinese government, I'm going to say 5-6 months ago, said they're going to start leaking money out, and it's done just what they wanted it to do. Shanghai only is up 23 cents, but 31.54 on the whole number there. Yesterday, we ran up on the close again. Dow was up 331, S&P up 26, NASDAQ up 43, quiet all day, and then we sneak up on the close. Bonds up another basis point, 446. Bund down 2 basis points, 248. Japan unchanged at 0.91. Quiet in the interest rate patch today. Oil up 63 cents, 79.89, trying to get back to 80. Brent up 56 cents, 84.44. Natural gas up a penny, 231. RBOB up 2 cents, 256. We've got gold up $41 to $23.81. Rally is over 1% as we keep thinking rate cuts hope survive. God. Silver up 50 cents, 23.87. Copper up 9 cents, 4.68. We've got the euro at 107.8 against the dollar, so that's unchanged. Same thing with the pound, 125.2, so they've been pretty steady. You know, the dollar has been somewhat stronger lately. Crypto up 8, finally up 682, 63,033. So back comfortably over 60,000. Yeah, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Top of the morning, Chief. It's currently 6:34 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at a 51 degrees Fahrenheit with a high of 62 today. Times of clouds and sun. An afternoon shower cannot be ruled out. Tonight is a brief shower or two hits or two this evening. Otherwise, it's mostly cloudy with a low of 52 degrees. Over to Phoenix, we got 64 degrees right now with a high of 91 degrees Fahrenheit. Mostly sunny, and tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 65 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we got 13 minutes. We got 31 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 27 minutes. We got 17 minutes inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 31 minutes. On to sports in the MLB, the Diamondbacks beat the Reds 5-4 in Cincinnati. And you're going to like this a lot, Chief. The White Sox beat the Guardians 3-2 in Chicago. Also, the Cubs play the Pirates in Pittsburgh today at 5:40 p.m. The Diamondbacks play the Orioles in Maryland today at 6:05 p.m. And the White Sox play the Guardians again today at 6:40 in Chicago. That's all I got for right now, Chief.
Remember, you're probably before your time, Ricardo, but remember remember when people used to do sports cartoons and so forth, Kevin? I don't think anybody does those anymore, but
I think I was a little too young for that.
But you ever see the movie The Natural?
Mm.
Well, when Roy Hobbs ends up on, what was it, the New York Knights, which is the world's worst team, he gets there and he hits a bunch of home runs, and all of a sudden there's a big picture of the Knights piling out of the cellar on some farm. Knights exit the cellar they weren't the worst record in baseball anymore. Well, the Sox evidently exited the cellar last night. Kevin, isn't Oakland or somebody worse than them now? Somebody is.
I'd have to pull it up because, you know, you would be requiring me to have been paying attention to the White Sox.
But I heard that last night.
It's such bad baseball that it's just kind of an affront to the sport.
Well, they said, I'm listening to them, the Sox have exited the cellar. All I could think of was that sketch on The Natural. The Knights have exited the cellar. All these guys piling out of the cellar doors. Pretty well done. Anyway, you know, Kevin, we've been talking a lot lately, we actually, one of my buddies, every year they have this John Wayne Festival. We go over Good Friday, and everybody watches John Wayne movies all day. And they watch The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance again. And again, it was the part where when the legend conflicts with the facts, or the story, print the legend, right? And we were talking about oil production yesterday with Dan, and the misconceptions regarding people's views of various various presidents and parties and whether they favor the industry and whether they don't. Don't ever really match up sometimes with the actual production numbers, because the industry, in one man's opinion, is so big, and the price swings and the inelasticity of it, where if you need more oil, it takes years to build to drill more, and then, by the way, if you're drilling too much, then it takes a while to shut back down, and you get these swings back and forth, that really the president, despite his attitudes, is almost like a pawn in the game. And to try and get that perception across to anybody is really hard. So last night, somehow or another, I go over the series on Thursday night. There's five of my buddies there. And they started talking about somehow somebody got on oil prices. And I said, well, funny, we talked about that this morning on the show. And they started talking about, what's his name, Biden, you know, doesn't like the industry and blah, blah, blah. And everybody's got an opinion. I said, by the way, is anybody at this table in the last 5 years, despite the strong opinions you have, ever looked at a table that said how much oil we produced every month for the last 30 years? And they looked at me and they go, why would we do that? because you're talking about it and you have a strong opinion about it. I said, why would anybody do that? How could you even find it? I'll tell you where to find it. I'll email it to you. I got it on my favorites page. Yeah, well, you're different. Why? Once in a while, you actually want to see what the hell you're talking about? It's an education in politics, I think, Kevin, in that. My buddy Dr. J, who spent a show with us, when he talked about Obama, how people on the right have this opinion of him, what he did as president, and blah, 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 and the liberal crap, whatever. And the implication is that somehow he did wrong for big business. Nothing could be further from the truth. Jan likes to, you know, he'll vote his pocketbook like most people. He said, if I could have this guy in office another 4 years, I'd vote for him tomorrow. He goes, even though I'm a Republican. Nobody has done more for big business than this guy.
Well, nope. And that's generally, you know, that's generally true of all of the liberals who rail against it. That's been true of the Biden administration,
too. Without a doubt.
It's only a matter of which big business.
Well, I mean, but you can say, you know, like,
who's going to get the most largesse is really what it's about.
I mean, last night somebody goes, hey, he cut back on drilling on public properties. I said, does anybody know how many public properties are, quote, allegedly, for leased for drilling that the companies don't want to give up that have never been drilled at? Well, what do you mean? I said, 90% of them have never been drilled at. So you cut it back by 10% where nobody's ever going to drill. It looks like you're doing good for the people who put you in office. You haven't done anything.
Well, but you're not allowing for something there. And that is, you're not allowing for them actually just not doing any leases for months and months at a time. So that is going to have an impact, but what you have to, you know, consider is that there's a time lag, because you're right, they don't drill on every bit of property that they where they acquire leases. The leases allow you to then explore, and then when you're done with the exploration, then you're going to make a decision about whether to, you know, drill a hole in the ground, and then you're going to get production. So there is a multi-year time lag on this, and you do have to allow for that. Now, you did rightfully lay out yesterday that if you were to map it out over the multiple years, you would not see a big decline anywhere along the way.
Actually, however, you did, in bushes.
However, this is the first administration that said, I'm going to kill it. And they have behaved as if that's what they want to do.
Behaved, I guess the message, I can never get a message across. That's because I'm stumbling all the time. The message is on two levels. It's on two levels of the chessboard. The message is, we're going to spank the oil industry, but underneath it they're saying, we're not going to hit you too hard. Keep going.
But the official policy of the administration is we're going to kill fossil fuels.
I know. I'm saying that.
And how many other initiatives support that? For instance, the idea that, even though it won't kill fossil fuels, but the idea that they want to kill the gasoline industry, by mandating electric cars in short order, which is not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to work, but that doesn't stop them from trying.
I'm whether or not they're just inept at their policy or they're BSing us about the policy, it conflicts with what's actually happening. I don't know whether they actually are trying to kill the industry deep down in their bones and just are too stupid to do it or inept, or whether it's all just a big mirage.
Well, there's only so much you can do in 3 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, Obama, I mean, I'll go back to him. Obama was allegedly for the middle class, the lower class. What the man did for 8 years with the money, now he was at the Fed and everybody, you know, who knows if he even knew what was happening. The idea of after the 2008 fiasco, of just dragging the money supply up 3-4.5% a year when your growth is 1 or 2, maybe. All that guy did more to increase the wealth of people who hold assets to the detriment of people who just earn money than any 8 years in our history. Yet that's not his legacy. His legacy is God knows what. You know, good guy who tried his best for the little man. He didn't do crap for the little man.
His legacy is making the healthcare system worse than it already was.
Well, that's another one though. It was the old model was so horrible.
Now, yeah. And now Biden's trying to run the need to improve the healthcare system. Yeah, you didn't do such a good job last time, Mr. President.
Well, you know, the only thing I will be as critical as you regarding how it ended up working. Well, again, you know, Kevin, I actually, believe it or not, you're gonna be sorry you did this. You disagreed with me. They had some kind of a model, okay, and he was never a detail guy, right? Way too much work. They had some kind of a model they wanted to push forth, but they let every drug company and every hospital write the goddamn model. The people who you wanted to be restrained are the people who, the system came out to be worse than it was before in terms of who's the benefiter. The hospitals came out.
There were no good intentions there. They knew damn well what they were doing. They wanted, you know, I can't remember the guy's name now, who was one of the architects of the system, such as it was, who said we're just relying on the stupidity of the voters.
Well,
to not know better.
The original theory, as I read, well, actually, it was the original one when Hillary was putting one together, is a lot of the criticism, and I surely will not accuse you of this, of the Obamacare system comes from a total lack of knowledge of what the system was before. The system before was really screwed up, too. It was falling apart. And Bush ignored it for 8 years, which he was good at doing. But the idea there is the insurance came from other people in the hospital. In other words, if you and I walked in with a Cadillac plan, they would just ream us up and down, and we'd walk out with the $20 diapers in the package and be happy because our insurance company paid for it. And the Cadillac people essentially insured the rest of the people in the hospital. But that system was falling apart, as the insurance company was saying, we're not doing that anymore. So the fallback position was, hey, look, if everybody had insurance, then some of the people wouldn't be paying for all the other people who don't. I mean there's nothing wrong with the theory of it, but the execution fell apart, as you're saying. But the idea of having 100 people going to a hospital and 25 have insurance and they're paying, the other 75 don't, and you got to take care of them every way, that's what the old system was falling apart towards. And the idea was maybe everybody should have to pay for insurance or something, and that way when you go in there, some people aren't paying more than the other people. That was the original theory, and boy, it sure as hell fell apart, didn't it?
Yeah, it kind of did, didn't it?
But I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, wait a minute. why isn't everybody forced to pay for part of their health care or their insurance? That way the burden doesn't go on the few people that are. But then over the next few years, and everybody's buddy doing the system and everything else, and the people from the hospitals and medical and drug companies getting involved, all of a sudden you got this. I won't say it's worse, but it's probably no better than it was before. But I think the one before was going to fall apart, Kevin. I really do.
Yeah. So.
So here we are.
I had advocated for something completely different. So.
Me too.
I don't want to repaint that picture. I can tweet out a link if anybody wants to see, because I wrote this up in 2010, because I got tired of explaining it to people, so I just wrote it and said, here, read this.
Well, the weird part, you're probably, if you know people that are on Medicare, it's funny because of, well, it's not funny, but right now, there's like penalties for you being a sandbagger, for lack of a better term. If you decide I get to be 65, and by the way, I don't have any prescription drugs, I'm not gonna pick up that part of my insurance. And you don't do it. And all of a sudden you're 72, and something happens to you. Now I got this pile of prescription drugs that, oh, by the way, I'm not gonna pay for them because they're ridiculously expensive. I need insurance. If you sign up when you're like 72, they take the 7 years that you basically snuck free, and you got to pay a penalty to make up for it. I don't have a problem with that, honestly. It sounds weird, but I mean, you can't wait. If you're healthy, never go to the hospital, and on your way in, there's an insurance window where you buy the insurance when you know you need it. I mean, you can't do that either, right?
Well, yeah, you can't buy homeowners insurance to cover the fire that's burning right now.
California, they tried to do that. It's coming over the hill, right?
Well, California, they tried to do it, and that's how Obamacare works. Theoretically there was a mandate that forced everybody to buy it, but people didn't.
No.
And so what you're saying is, yeah, you have to insure everybody, even if there's a pre-existing condition. Well, I'm sympathetic to the poor people with pre-existing conditions, but you know what? If you'd been responsible and bought insurance, you wouldn't be dealing with the problem related to that of acquiring insurance.
We also have the idea that the care is supposed to be even. This is the part, I don't know how many doctors you hang around with, Kevin. Maybe they're not the best party animals, but I know a couple, and I don't see them that often, but once in a while we talk about the industry, and it's astounding the difference in care depending on what your insurance is or whether you're there's a lot of places now that won't take Medicare. There's hospitals.
They will take it, but they won't take new Medicare patients.
Right, or there's people that'll do hip surgeries. They don't want no Medicare. If you can't write me a $20,000 check, you're out. So it's becoming very selective again in a lot of areas, to where, or the wait times, you know, those places, if you want to get a knee replaced under Medicare, who knows, it might be 3 months, or somebody else might be 2 weeks or something. It again is dropping down into this, you know, who's got the dough kind of insurance, even though it's not supposed to be, but it clearly is.
So I mean, you're telling me Obamacare didn't work for that?
No. Well, it did for a while.
It didn't solve the inequity? I'm shocked.
Well, there's always going to be...
Of course it didn't. It never was going to. You know, the whole thing was engineered around saying, maybe we can have a completely socialized medicine system, and we're just going to have to, ratchet up the pain involved in getting there.
Well, there's pluses and minuses to that as well, the socialized system, but it also comes down to... You know, somebody's Kevin, and I don't know how I can describe this, but I've been to Denmark. I've never been to Sweden. I know people, obviously, who came from there and so forth. And once in a while, when I have nothing better to do, I read a little bit about their economy. And I don't want the Swedish system here. But, you know, our system, our problem, well, one of our problems, I think, somehow or another, our crime and punishment is totally screwed up, and clearly in Chicago it is. It clearly is on white-collar crime. It clearly is on tax issues, where some people can take U.S. patents and stuff and put them overseas and pay leases to Sri Lanka or someplace and have your income over there, and we somehow can't deal with it because people have power, they pay off politicians or whatever they do. I don't think that the Swedish socialist system works bad for those people and kind of any level, because they're not like us. They're not all a bunch of crooks. I mean, everybody's not trying to game the system as much there as it is here. I mean, this is...
I don't know that to be true, so I don't know what...
It seems like... I don't care what kind of system we have.
You may note that in many ways the Swedes have been backing off of theirs.
Well, I get it. I'm just saying...
They're so, you know, what do they call them? Democratic socialist initiatives.
Well, I mean...
Because they haven't worked.
I'm trying to make a point, and I screwed up. It's like arguing with my brother Dan, who's, you know, brilliant guy, president of PTI. He knows way more about taxes than I ever. He's a CPA. And he'll say, you know, we should go to a value-added system. But Dan's a guy that thinks much higher of people's actions, not of people themselves, but people's actions than me. And my response is, Dan, we have a system that the reason why it's kind of screwed up because everybody's found a way to game it all along the line. You're making the assumption that if we change the system, the same people won't find a way to game the other system. I mean, we can't punish the people who game the system. We can't even make them pay, much less punish them. And yet, switching the system, which will take 3 decades, somehow at the end of 3 decades, we'll see how we did. I mean, I don't see that as a solution. It's, you know,
I will say I think simplicity of the tax system makes it harder to game it.
I think the simplicity of it makes it easier to game it.
Why do you think so? I mean, I'm not advocating the value added and scrapping the old one like Dan is, but you know what? Basically, what you're doing is a sales tax. So how do you how would that not be harder to game? Can you go into the store and not pay sales tax under normal conditions?
You can't underestimate the imagination of people. If you were to make a very simple tax code like the one we have now supposed to be, okay.
It is.
Well, I'm saying, but it has evolved to try and take care of the stuff that people have done. Let's just say, for example, Kevin, you and I put one together. It was very simple. If you run a business, say Stocks and Jacks, you have revenue. By the way, you have expenses. You have payroll. You have all this kind of stuff. You take the expenses away from the revenue, and what you got left is profit. And oh, by the way, you got to give us 25% of the profit. To me, it's about as simple as it gets. Okay, now why is the tax thing 90 bazillion pages and still doesn't work? Because guess what? A guy maybe like me, who has a few clever, you know what? We got this guy Ricardo. I like him in Chicago, but you know he's gonna look pretty good in the Bahamas. By the way, Ricardo likes the sun. rate, the tax rate in the Bahamas is 2%, not 30 like it is here. How about we take the trademark Stocks and Jocks, which I have, and we send Ricardo over to the Bahamas and open up a sub of PTI over there or something. And he sits over there and does on the beach all day. But once a week, he sends in a schedule telling me who to put on the show. Okay? So say we had a sponsor for $1 million for your PTI. Boy, I'd love, or I meant PTI, Stocks and Jocks. I'd love to have that. And all of a sudden, we're going to pay $100,000 a month or $90,000 a month for the trademark, because, God, we can't do the show without Stocks and Jocks, can we? And by the way, and we're going to, for the trademark and for Ricardo's expertise in scheduling people in one sheet of paper. Now the nothing in our simple, very simple form disagrees with that. Wait a minute. Now your expenses here, instead of your revenue here, instead of $1 million, is $100,000 because you got this expense over there. Yeah, but it's the same place. Yeah, but the law doesn't say anything about that. I mean, I can be over there, and their taxes over there. I just leave the money over there. And oh, by the way, if I want to take over another radio station, I'll just buy them from there and not here.
Well, at the risk of putting words in his mouth, that's why Dan wants a consumption-based tax.
Well, okay,
because then when you buy anything, you have to pay the tax, and you know, your alternative is to not buy stuff.
Okay, but it sounds like it's more foolproof. So did mine when it started out.
Nah, it didn't. You know, the problem with our tax code, Tom, is that it is written to incentivize certain types of behaviors and certain types of activities. And, of course, that's, A, basically built on corruption, even if it wasn't intended to. It was supposed to be built on economic policy, but it's really built on corruption. And then on top of that, that's what makes it easy to game the system.
Well, but did anybody ever think?
And it really gets down to what's deductible and what isn't. So, you know, all the debate is always over the tax rate. And how many times have I said to you, you know, you can make tax rate anything you want. You can make it, you know, 90%. It doesn't matter. If my net income is zero, I ain't paying any taxes. And if I can, use the accounting rules related to tax to make my net income zero or near zero or some really low number that does in no way reflects my real profitability or my cash flow, then I'm not paying tax. And the only people who can take advantage of that are the ones who can afford the best tax accountants and attorneys. And so, you and I are small businesses and so on. We all pay the full rate, and everybody else pays squadoosh.
Well, but I'm saying my response to, if I put the first one together, the simple one that I came across, Kevin, I don't have that much of an imagination. I would never dream of somebody taking a U.S. patent overseas and paying lease to the patent that the U.S. gave them. So my answer to you and Dan regarding a sales tax or the other stuff is, you'll find out in 10 years how guys are going to game it, because they will somehow, because they did on the other one. I mean, that's maybe a dumb thing to say, but I would never, would you have ever have guessed that somebody would be, the first people that did this was, I think it was Forest Labs. How did they not go right to jail without a key to get out? And somebody goes, well, man, it's not like, what the definition is, the tax code, it's not like it says what's legal. It doesn't put certain things that are illegal in there. And our friend Bob was good at this. Where does it say I can't take my patent overseas and lease my own patent back in a place that has a less tax? Where does it say that? Okay, it doesn't say that. We better put that in there. Okay, then well, somebody else has another little noggin twister. Then we better put that in. All of a sudden, the tax code, which was 10 lines of the way I said it, is now 1,000 pages. Because every time somebody decided to do something around it, we tried to counter it. Or maybe not, or counter it for some industries and not others. You're right. But I think everything is going to end up being like that.
As always, rules are only a problem for those who are going to follow them.
Yes. And somehow that mentality, I'm a little bitter on this week, Kevin, after getting my garage broken in again yesterday morning by somebody looking for a gun. and without any sort of... Now, do you think if I called the police and said, come on over and get some fingerprints, they would laugh at me? I think they would. Yet, if they found some, do you think the person would be in the system? I'd say, yeah. So how are we ever going to stop it if we don't care? I mean...
Well, and that's always been the IRS's big weapon, is the threat, not the threat of being caught, because your likelihood was usually pretty small. It was always the threat of the consequences of getting caught.
Well,
if you're not going to enforce anything when you do have the opportunity to catch someone, then you got a problem.
My one of my attorney buddies that I meet with regularly is representing a lot of people on PPP loans. And I, of course, me being the dummy that I still am, I go, God, are they going after some of these big places? Oh, no. The people he's representing, Kevin, some of them sent in an application, an early application that was maybe not totally accurate. They never even got the loan. They never got a dime. It's not like they applied for the money, got it, and then lied saying they paid it out for salaries and they didn't and kept the dough. They never even... Talk about the low-hanging fruit. You're gonna find people who never got the money? When there's all kinds of people that got the money that probably didn't deserve it. This is where we're at. This is crazy. I mean, were they right
for me on that?
I mean, should they have ever filled out a form that wasn't entirely accurate? No. I get that part, but really? But how much did they make? Well, they didn't make anything. What do you mean they didn't make anything? Why would anybody be taking his time up to go after him? That's why they need me to represent him. Okay, then. I mean, you couldn't write fiction like this, Kevin.
Yeah, I probably could now.
you wouldn't sell any books. But so, what do you like in these playoffs? I mean, the guy came back last night, that kid in Denver, and it was kind of a one-man gang. But not Denver, the guy in San Antonio. But Denver looks like they're squashed, huh?
Denver's in big trouble. Especially because they've lost games on their own court.
I can't get over how good this kid is on the Knicks. Is Brunson? Oh, he might not play, right? Was it last night or tonight?
I think there was some kind of nagging injury there that might keep him out.
Jalen
Brunson is he's a really fine player. He always has been. I remember him from Villanova days. They have three guys on the Knicks who played on the national championship team at Villanova together, which is kind of interesting that they've got them all reunited. There's a certain continuity of that.
Yeah,
Brunson is one of them, and even though he was a second round draft pick, he was good. I remember him in college; he was good, and he probably the biggest thing he had working against him was that he went to school for 4 years. And, in college basketball, probably the most insulting thing you could be called is a senior.
Yeah, I know.
So because everybody else is long gone to their professional careers. But, he's also, in many ways, a self-made player. And by that I mean, he has worked on all the finer points of his game. So he is very talented. I would not diminish how gifted he is. But he's not gifted like many of the other guys who were taken as, first picks in the first five of the draft or anything like that. But what he has done is he has worked at the craft of the game. His father was a professional player, too. So he has really fine-tuned his game so that he is so good with footwork, with angles, with anticipation of the game and so on, and it has really paid off for him.
Yeah, I watch him, I'm going, wait a minute, this guy, he knows how to play to mid-range. He almost looks like he's got some Chet Walker in him or Larry Bird or something. He knows right where everybody is, and he's got a big court awareness, and takes advantage whenever the defense falls apart, which is a lot these days. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 15, NASDAQ Futures up 68. We'll talk to Mr. Carl Denninger. We're going to talk some of the stuff today we mentioned the other day, a topic of worldwide debt and so forth, and I got some numbers on that. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net. Support the Stocks and Jocks team, hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, and Chief's favorite, the Stocks and Jocks ladies thong, all available at our online store. Just go to stocksandjocks.com and click the link to order any amount of great Stocks and Jocks merchandise for yourself and any other Stocks and Jocks listener in your life. The prices are affordable and the selection is out of the park. The Stocks and Jocks online store at stocksandjocks.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com.
Little Neil Young to start us off here. That's always good. S&P futures up 15. NASDAQ futures up 69. He's looking for a heart of gold. Is that how we lead into Carl? Does Carl have a heart of gold? Can't hear him, but he's there somewhere, I think.
Uh-oh.
Are you the guy with the heart of gold?
Yeah. You can't hear me?
Well, now we can. You must have unmuted yourself a second after. Anyway, you're good. You're good.
All right. Well, it's a black heart of death.
Oh, God. the Grim Reaper heart.
It is the black heart of death, so you know. I think we should have a real kind of a come to Jesus on some of this stuff because, and I know I brought this.
Where are we going to find him? Where do we got to go? Where's he sitting?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's at the right hand of the guy in the red suit.
Yeah.
So I came to this recognition a long, long time ago. More than probably, I don't know, 30 or 40 years back now, that the laws of thermodynamics apply to absolutely everything, including economics. And I've had people look at me like I've got six heads when I tell them this. But I'm absolutely convinced of it. And you can boil the laws of thermodynamics down into three basic facts. You can get into all kinds of wonky physics stuff, but you don't have to. It's this. You cannot win. In other words, there's no such thing as a free lunch. It's impossible. You cannot break even either. There's always loss. So whenever you do something, there is always something that gets left behind because it's just the way life is. And you also can't avoid playing the game. Okay.
Yeah, well.
So all these things are facts. Okay. So now, let's apply that to the problems we find ourselves in. Let's just take one area, because you guys were talking about, you know, medical insurance and things like this. And
Point, Carl, is it's all the same subject. Wherever you look, it's the same stuff.
Well, yeah, it's the same stuff, but that's the problem.
Yeah. You're right. I'm agreeing with you. You're saying they're the same laws working through every subject we keep up with.
Right, and so let's just back off just a tiny little bit here, okay? Because it's kind of important, I think. And let's just look at this from the standpoint of when we take a look at all of these different elements. Everything that you do economically, every business, your personal life, everything else, there is loss in all these things. Okay? So, this is fine in the general sense, except that the loss in all those things says that there is an element of parasitic activity associated with all of them. This has always been the case. All right.
But there's degrees.
But we have cranked it up so far, Chief, that now you're being strangled by it. All right. So take a look at, for example, you know, this stuff that's going on with healthcare. Healthcare historically is, and if you think about it, healthcare is essentially a parasitic thing. Okay. In other words, it doesn't produce anything. It allows you to produce things in some cases. All right. Because obviously, if you need something done and you don't do it, you're not going to be very productive. Right. So it therefore is an assist, if you will, to the production of things. Okay. That's fine. But it by itself produces nothing. So, and on a historical basis, healthcare was about 3-4% of GDP. That is the predicate upon which Medicare was, the tax rates and such were set. Well, now it's 20% of GDP. $1.05. And that is
some
on
of it's
top...
some of it's expected because people are older and need more care, but a lot of it's just stealing, like you said.
Stop, Chief. People have not... That's abject nonsense.
Okay.
Okay, that's abject nonsense. It's a lie. And it needs to stop. It needs to go away. Most of the life expectancy improvement that has been found in through healthcare, essentially all of it came from very early deaths that didn't happen. And that's the statistical fact. Okay, if you made it out of your, you know, out of your teens, you got out of childhood, you became an adult. Statistically speaking, there hasn't been much change. And oh, by the way, over the last in the United States at least, that data is now reversing. It's going the other way.
We're probably talking about a couple of different. I'm probably going back further than you.
Well, yeah, okay. You can go ahead and you can make the argument that in 1850.
No. I'm talking about when I was. I'm a little older than you, not much. When I was young, and I was always fairly an observant duck. The people who came back from the war, or who were working here in these munitions factories, because Pullman was one of them, worked in very hazardous environment. Everybody smoked to the nines.
Right.
Nobody. There was no. You know, they invented margarine, which put more people in the grave than anything else. Those people at age 50. There was a thing on Quora Digest last week where a guy was talking about his dad was in the war, smoked all the way. A picture of his dad at age 50 and this guy at age 50. You'd swear they were 20 years difference. How bad the old man was. None of those guys ever got really any kind of health care. A lot of them died of a heart attack when they were 58 or 59. You didn't spend money on keeping those guys alive, even though you should have. But if there wasn't like an injury from the war or something, they got no care from a veteran. I mean, there were a lot of people that were in those kinds of situations. And you know, how many people worked in plants where you made asbestos, for God's sake? I mean, that doesn't happen here anymore. I mean, so there's more. Plus, people expect to be healthier. Most people, if they had a bad knee, they had a bad knee. They just dealt with it.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
There is somewhat of a difference. I'm not trying to push the gap from 3% to 20. I'm not arguing with you all on that. I'm saying there's right. Some lifestyle differences. I mean, you didn't have
oh,
anybody...
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I don't think anybody, in their right mind argues that that's not the case. But in addition, we are going the wrong way on this. Okay, and we have been for a while now.
I'm thinking your great-grandma... Carl never dreamed of getting a new hip at age 84 or something like that.
No, my great grandma just dealt with whatever it was that was going on.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, is that that's not where. I mean, if you look at the data, that's not where the problem is. Okay,
I agree.
And I'm not saying that there isn't an element of that. Of course, there is an element of that. I'm saying that's not where the issue stands for the most part. And these people. They do not care. They do not put any sort of effort into caring or doing anything about it. They never have. It is strictly, it just like everything else, a financialization. As soon as you allow anything related to so-called insurance, okay, as soon as you allow that party to have anything to do with the underlying cost and structure of whatever it is that's being insured, it is a felony. And unless you stop it, you're going to get screwed. Because every insurance company in existence is regulated as to their profit, as to their margins. Every single one. And I just, you know, the AAA was just out the other day touting how many crashes. By the way, if you have one of these new cars that has all these fancy doodads, you know, the lane minder and the cross traffic alert and the backup cameras and all that, you know, and all this other stuff, by God, those things never crash. They have cut the number of crashes a huge amount. Well, if they've cut the number of crashes a huge amount, would you mind explaining to me why your auto insurance premiums haven't gone to the floor?
Because if you ever do crash one of them, the cost to fix the damn thing is sort of rough.
Well, okay, but the bottom line is that, so it's a lie. Okay, it's a clever lie, but it's a lie because the headlight is $2,000. Instead of being $50 for a piece of plastic.
Carol, if you listen to radio and TV all day long, what percentage of the words you hear are flat out lies? 50?
Well, a huge amount. But I mean, this was a thing that was on CNN the other day that, you know, AAA was, oh, hey, you know, yeah. Who's been pushing all this garbage over the last however many years? The car insurance companies, of course. All right. Who pushes all this other nonsense? I mean, this is an absolutely ridiculous situation as pertains to, you know, the reality of life, if you will. Absolutely none of it makes any sense. And we are not going to stop any of the problems that we have in the United States until this gets fixed.
It's not going to get fixed, Carl. For some reason...
Well, it either fixes or it blows up in our face. Those are the choices.
It's no different than the guy breaking into my garage the other night, fumbling around looking for a gun in my car. Now, if I were to call the police, unless this guy was, you know, I'm sure it was the young kid they sent over the fence, and whatever, and I, the chances of him wearing gloves or dusting his prints or something, if somebody with the forensic knowledge got in my truck, he's going to find a print somewhere. I guarantee you, whoever it is in the system someplace, they could go get him. But they have zero interest. I mean,
right.
why don't we at least ask the question? I mean, how many people do we have? And, you know, I want to ask you this. We're going to talk about global debt maybe second half hour, but I want to ask you this question in terms of giving people money. What do you actually expect? And where was I going with this? But we don't seem to care. But how do you, if you bring a drug company guy in front of Congress and you've got 15 idiots in Congress, and by the way, they're not idiots. They're really good at what they do, or they wouldn't have that job. But they just, their motivations are different than maybe we would like them to be, being in that spot. And maybe that he needs to be fixed somehow. I don't know how you do it, but somehow maybe needs to be fixed somehow. But they'll say, you got this drug, it's aspirin, and you're charging $1,000 for it. Well, yeah, you know, with the research, we got this anyway. Not one of those bleeps will say, hey, Carol, let me ask you a question. You're selling this stuff now. It's been 2 years since you've been manufacturing it. What does a dose cost you? Variable cost. The guy would have a hemorrhoid pop or something if you asked him that question.
Yeah.
I mean, because the question is, you're charging $1,000. What does it cost you? If it's $990 and we got to send Ricardo down to the Amazon to wrestle an alligator and pull his wisdom tooth and get the something from in there, I get it. But if it's $5, what are we doing wrong here? We didn't give you a license to just ream everybody for the next 17 years, did we?
I mean, well, yeah, we did. But,
at any other level, but in the medical side...
Chief, think about this, okay? Do you want to know why that happens?
Well, part of it's the insurance. You're not really paying for it.
Oh no, no. Actually, it's really a very basic, simple reality of how we structure things today. When that drug went to the FDA for approval, all right, first off, the FDA is a revolving door. Their people go out into the drug company world after they get done working for the government. And by the way, some of them come from the drug company world when they get appointed to the FDA.
Oh, absolutely. It's the name revolving door.
It's a revolving door. Okay, that's the first problem. The second one is, by law, a drug does not have to demonstrate that it is either better, cheaper, or safer than the existing alternatives in order to get approved.
Okay.
Excuse me?
Well, what I'm saying, but now...
All it has to do... No, think about this, Chief. So aspirin has been off patent forever, right?
I don't think it ever was on.
Well, yeah, I don't... But point being, aspirin, right?
Yeah.
All right. So remember all this stuff with Vioxx?
Yeah, vaguely.
Okay, Vioxx was a... anti-inflammatory that was prescribed for arthritis.
I do remember that, yeah.
Right. It was approved. It went through full approval. All right? Unlike the nonsense with the shots, this was a drug that actually went through full approval. In the original data was a signal that it could cause heart damage.
That's a problem.
It got approved anyway.
Maybe it could cause heart damage.
5 or 6 years later, it got pulled off the market after it had killed 60,000 people.
Yep.
Okay. Now, if the drug had to have proved that it was better, cheaper, or safer than the existing alternatives, which at the time included both Tylenol and aspirin, it never would have been approved in the first place.
Yeah, the other one was Tylenol is what? Ibuprofen or what's the other one?
Acetaminophen is Tylenol, and that in large doses can cause liver damage.
Especially if you drink.
Well, yeah, it can kill you. Yep. I mean, there's about 400 or 500 people a year that accidentally kill themselves.
I think somebody from the trading floor after a night of big drinking, a clerk had some of that, and I think he didn't make it.
Well, one of the challenges is that it's in things like NyQuil, and a lot of people don't realize that. So if you get a really bad cold, you might quaff some NyQuil and then take, you know, several Tylenol on top of it. And especially if you drink, the probability that that's going to destroy your liver is actually fairly high. And there's 500 or 600 people a year that manage to accidentally kill themselves. I mean, they're not trying to commit suicide.
No.
They kill themselves by accident doing this. It's... That's a real problem. But the thing is, this drug was fully approved by the FDA, went through the entire process, and then several years later, it gets yanked off the market. And there are still people to this day that scream that they want it back because it did work. Okay, I mean, that wasn't the question. The question was the risk of it whacking you in the process of working. And so we have... This is the basic issue that we have today with so many of these things, is that the total cost-benefit analysis picture is not part of the analysis. You don't have to prove, in order to get approval, that you are better than the existing alternatives.
Well, a lot of people...
In some fashion.
Right, but in some... It actually can work the other way. My mother, amazing as it may seem, because she never was heavy... She was for a generation. She rode her bike every day, did yoga till damn near the day she died, and she was really into fitness. And she was going to school at night to learn stuff.
Right.
Strange bird. I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But she had high blood pressure, even though you would never guess by looking at her.
It can happen. Yep.
And there was one drug that after she had problems with every one of the drugs. Finally, she ends up on one that works fine for her. And it gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and finally they're more expensive. And by the way, they take hers off the market. She was a solid 6 months going through the rotation of all the other stuff before she found another one that would work and she could handle.
That was tolerable, right?
Yeah, and I mean, so right. I mean, I know just from her, there's a million high blood pressure drugs on the market, but to say they're all equivalent, some people can handle some and some the other, even though and tests, they're probably all the same. You know.
Well, okay. So here's another part of that scam. You do know that up until about 20 years ago, as you got older, the normal range of blood pressure ratcheted up slowly.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you're 120 over 80, they'll try to put you on a drug.
Yeah, I know. It used to be like, 145 over 90 or something. No, they keep going down. Yeah.
Well, it depends as you get older, okay? But here's the thing. The problem with this is that the data does not support this. All right? If you look at this, the side effects and the damage from these drugs is not part of the computation. All right? What it is, well, you know, if you have the, you know, if your blood pressure is at this level, you're more likely to have a heart attack or stroke. Okay? Well, obviously, heart attacks and strokes are bad. You don't want to have one of those. And so, you know, okay, fine. However, you must take into account the damage done by the drug. You have to take that into account.
Yeah, except they don't do that.
Which they don't do. And so then the other problem that you have is that is the fact that this person has high blood pressure, is that the cause, or is that a symptom of something else? And are we treating the symptoms instead of the cause?
It's the symptoms. You always treat your symptoms.
We always treat symptoms, yeah. Right? If you are type 2 diabetic, you can become not type 2 diabetic by not eating carbohydrates.
Well, I don't know if you can find some of these guys anymore, the old type general practitioners, and those guys, they would tell you, I knew a couple of them, they're all dead, but they would tell you, before you even open up your mouth, I look at your color, I look at your eyes, I look the way you walk, and I look the way you sit down, I already know whether you're hurt. You don't have to tell me. I mean, that's what they were good at. And
oh, yeah, no, there was a family physician that was, you know, my family's when I was growing up, okay, not when I was a kid, but when I became an adult, my entire family used that one guy. His name was Yamaguchi. He was an old Japanese dude. And he's gone now. But he left the practice of medicine due to old age. I mean, you know, but he basically said this has become a cookie cutter business. It's no longer about actually looking at what's really going on. It's about, well, yeah, you know, you have this symptom, here's this drug, you have this, you know, whatever, here's this thing. And you want to know why health has gone down the toilet in America? That's a huge part of the reason.
I would agree. I mean, they would tell you that when you walk in and you say, well, you know, this hurts. Well, did you hurt it? No, but this hurts. He says immediately through your mind, there's a 20% chance, you know, the guy slept wrong or something. There's, you know, a 40% chance that he might actually have an injury. Or there's probably a 30% chance or 20% chance he has a freaking tumor in there. And, you know, and the thing, what you do is you say, here, Carl, here's, take aspirin for 2 days. If it still is hurting, get your butt back here. So if it's just you slept wrong or something, now you're back here, whatever I gave you, the simplest thing, I didn't just blow you off. It's now we're on to the next level. It's got to be something else. What is it? Then maybe after the second trip, you're going to get an MRI or something. There's a progression that I don't know if they can even do anymore. But the progression used to be that, because you live close, come back in 2 days and see me if this doesn't help. You know, it's not just they're blowing you off. We're assuming it's the 50% chance that it's next to nothing. But by the way, if it's still there from 2 days, we got to dig deeper, and it just may be something that's like really bad. But we're not gonna deal with that today. We don't have to, right?
And then the other problem is that you have all these people that want to run all this screening stuff, okay? And a huge part of the time, the screening test, if it comes positive, is wrong.
Right. Well, then it takes 6 weeks to get into the test.
Well,
plus a fortune.
But here's the other problem. The minute that you pop positive on that, number one, your chart's been branded permanently. All right.
Yeah.
So you're hosed if that ever manages to get into the public discourse as far as, you know, decisions. Now, Obamacare supposedly fixed that, the pre-existing, you know, whatever. However, that false positive brands your chart. And secondly, now, not only are you freaked out that you think you're going to die, all right, when that may not, in fact, be the case.
Yeah.
Right? But that's what you believe. But now they got you. I'll give you just one of the prime examples of this. You know, they love to stick scopes up your butt, right? Well, now they've got the new thing is, you know, take a crap in a box and send it in, and we'll tell you whether or not you need to have the scope stuffed on your butt. If you come up positive on that crap in the box test, the scope up your butt test is twice as expensive.
Really?
It's the same test.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so this is the grift and scam that is inherent in everything. And then the second question is, and this is the one that nobody wants to talk about, is there is a risk from that scope in the butt procedure, all right, because you can perforate the person's colon.
I know two people that happened to them. They went back to work, and all of a sudden they're bleeding all over the place.
And you know what? If that happens, not only can it kill you, which obviously is very bad, okay, can kill you directly. If it doesn't, there's a very high probability you're going to be crapping in a bag for the rest of your life.
Well, one of the guys who was actually a guest on the show a few times, he was 6 pints of blood. He ended up being okay.
He's lucky he didn't die.
Yeah, oh yeah, without a doubt.
And the thing is that in the computation for how many colon cancers we catch with this? Of course not.
Well, if you ever get to the point, if you have an issue, which I did years ago, thankfully it's fixed, where you have to be on blood thinners.
Oh, God forbid.
Yeah. They're going to tell you the part about the hardest thing in the world is to get off a blood thinner from a doctor because they don't want to die from you to die from the stuff they're fixing you for. I don't care if you die from something.
Well, yeah, and my dad had phlebitis, so he was on low dose stuff constantly because if you throw a clot from that, you're done.
Oh yeah.
Okay, and you know, and that's mostly a genetic type of thing. There's not really a whole lot you can do about it, but it very reliably kills you with a stroke.
Oh yeah.
and so you know it's bad, but yeah, I mean they you know he's constant and.
Well, Chicago, you got to worry you don't get shot or you're toast if you get around a blood
thinner. Well, yeah, if you get shot, you're going to bleed out before they can do anything about it.
SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 75. We talk more about the market when we come back. And Ricardo actually wrote down what we said we were going to talk about today, Carl. It was a world debt issue. I got some numbers up here.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's interesting stuff. Be right back. Buy gold, really. Gold to the moon here, Carl. What's going on? Are you one of the guys buying the gold at Costco?
Oh, good God, no.
Everybody's buying. They sold out like the second time, didn't they?
I know that's it. Most, you know what? When you're really hungry and everything's gone down the toilet, I've got a chicken. You know how much gold it's going to cost you to get one? All of it.
Well, how come? Since you and I were supposed to be smart guys, why didn't when I used to go to Vegas a lot? Why don't we just drive out there? Because I could bring it back on a plane. You know, when you used to use real silver dollars. Why the hell don't we just get like a couple of thousand bucks worth and just bring them home? What are they worth now in silver?
Well, you know, it's during the war, they sewed a gold coin into the airmen's jackets, okay? And they told them it was there, of course. The entire point of it was to try to bribe somebody if you were about to get captured as a POW.
Well, that makes sense.
That was the whole reason it was there.
Well, yeah.
And you know what? That makes sense.
S&P Futures up 17. Be right back.
Well, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. This could be one of the toughest investment climates that I have ever seen. It's very difficult for someone to decide between risk-free investments like treasuries or CDs, corporate bonds at all-time low rates, or the stock market, which right now is somewhat unloved. On the other hand, if you have wealth, you are an investor and should be concerned about income and risk. Like everyone knows by now, the PTI Securities has a 14-year investment program called the Protect Index Program that has served our clients well for a long time. I think, however, that people associate that program with new cash investing, and that is somewhat true. What you may not know is that PTI also uses the same concepts and risk parameters to help clients with individual stock positions, especially a concentrated stock position. How many of you have your stock sitting in a brokerage firm where, if you ever felt the need for protection or income enhancement strategies, there'd be no one with a clue on how to help you? Are you really comfortable with those large concentrated stock positions? Ever think of talking about ways to possibly adjust the risk or income potential? It can only happen if that stock is in an account with a firm like PTI. And again, I can't think of a firm like PTI, with the Chief and others averaging 15 years of floor trading. Give us a call or contact PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricardo on the board. SP futures up 16. NASDAQ futures up 71. Now, if we were over in, let's go dial up 104, trying for 8 days in a row. Over in Europe, the DAX is up 114.6%, FTSE up 64.7%, CAC around up 54.7%. Now, we should have had, if I would have mentioned it to him, he would have dug it up. We had our friend Ricardo playing for the European markets with, is it Rita Coolidge? We're on an all-time high, Carl, from the bond thing. It was her, right?
You know, this is the issues we have with debt as a means.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. You're going to confirm that it was Rita Coolidge, I was hoping. Maybe Ricardo will find it for the next break, or for we can just pop in with that. Anyway, Nikkei up 155.4%. Hang Seng up 425. These guys, God, Carl, we were talking about these guys going under 15,000. Now they're almost at 19,000. 18,000, 963, 2.3%. Amazing how pouring money into the system raises your stock market, doesn't it? Yesterday, the Dow up 331, S&P up 26, NASDAQ up 43. Bonds, not much going on there. 10 years up a little bit, 3 basis points, 4.48, but down from the 4.85, and that's one of the reasons the market has run up here, probably the reason. Japan unchanged and Bund unchanged. Oil up 44 cents, 79.70, but still under 80 bucks. Brent up 38 cents, 84.26. Natural gas down 3 cents, 226. Gold, and here's a big mover today, up 32 bucks, 23.73. So making a move towards 2,400 again. We'll see if it makes it. Silver up 39 cents, 28.74. That's high for those guys. Copper up another 8 cents, 466. And we've got Bitcoin up 954, 63,305. What do you got for us, Ricardo?
Morning, Chief. Morning, Carl. It's currently 7:36 a.m. right here in Chicago. 51 degrees Fahrenheit right now with a high of 62. Times of clouds and sun here in Chicago. An afternoon shower cannot be ruled out, though. Tonight, a brief shower or two this evening. Otherwise, it's going to be mostly cloudy with a low of 52 degrees Fahrenheit. Over in Phoenix, we got 64 degrees right now with a high of 91 degrees, mostly sunny. And tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 65 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, we got 29 minutes, 56 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 37 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes and 34 minutes. Inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. On to sports, the Diamondbacks beat the Reds 5-4 in Cincinnati. The White Sox beat the Guardians 3-2 in Chicago, and the Cubs play the Pirates in Pittsburgh today at 5:40 p.m. We got a couple more games today too. The Diamondbacks play the Orioles in Maryland today at 6:05 p.m. And finally, the White Sox play the Guardians today again at 6:40 p.m. in Chicago. That's all I got in traffic, weather, sports for you, Chief.
Carl, before we get into this, I want to talk to you about a question somebody gave Milton Friedman back when I was in class. We had a class that nobody wanted to learn the stuff, and he didn't really want to teach it. It was the theory of price, one of those complicated things. And he didn't even have the book was not published yet. It was a manuscript, right?
Oh, okay.
But you never saw so many curves in calculus in your life. And everybody's sitting there going, what is all this crap, basically? But you learned a bunch. But basically, he was teaching other stuff along with it, right? And last Sunday, we got dinner at my brother's, my nephew. Nice kid, but I mentioned Milton Friedman, and he goes, yeah, well, everything he's ever taught has been discredited. I said, by who exactly?
Yeah, that would be the, yeah.
Anyway, but, you know, it is funny. That was so long ago, Carl, a lot of the stuff that he believed was the policy issues were signs of the times. I mean, he really was a believer that if you increased economic freedom in a country, political totalitarianism would be very likely to fall because one couldn't exist without the other.
And he was dead wrong.
He's dead wrong on that. But I mean, I don't know how you would know that until you saw it play out, you know. But I'm saying that was a prediction. It wasn't part of his economic theory at all. But one of the other things was, somebody asked him one day, "What do you think of the national debt?" And he said, "It doesn't matter." And somebody says, "What do you mean it doesn't matter?" He said, "Well, think of it as somebody has a home where Carl and his wife, I assume you were married at one time, if you owe to your wife $100, he goes, the house is flat, who cares?" And you know, in his world, which, I mean, the guy's been dead for a while, if the people of Chicago decide to lend the city money for 10 new bridges, they don't have to wait for the bridges, and the city, you know, pays the money back over time, maybe you put a toll on the business, maybe you don't, or maybe you just pay it back out of taxes, he's probably right. What's the difference? The city's flat. Just the people decided to give money to the government because they wanted this bridge built because they're so you get from there. But now in this world, I don't think if you would have said, hey Melty buddy, what if the Chinese and the Japanese and the Irish and the people own 60% of your national debt? I have a feeling he would have pivoted and say, well, how the hell is that going to happen? And say, just assume it does. He would say, well, that's a different ballgame, I would think.
Well, it's not. Well, you're not flat because somebody has to get the interest payments.
Well, right.
Right. But this goes back to what I was saying. Chief, this goes back to exactly what I started with the first half hour, is that there is a parasitic element to all, and thermodynamics applies. Nothing is free, you can't break even, and you can't avoid playing the game.
So you didn't pay your wife interest?
Well, if I paid my wife interest, then, you know, she wanted something in exchange for it.
Yes.
Probably a romp, you know, tonight or whatever, right?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, when you talk about national debt, there's all kinds of different debt. You know,
I get that, but here's the problem. That, and this is why we have the stupid party in power, and then we have the malicious one that wants power back.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure you heard that word salad garbage that came out of one of Biden's advisors, one of his chief advisors on the economy, a couple of days ago, about MMT-related types of things.
Well, the lady who wrote the new monetary theory that makes absolutely no sense is on his Council of Economic Advisors, isn't she?
Yeah, well, I went after, years ago, when Lauren Lister had a show on RT, which, you know, I mean, it's Putin News Network. How's that any different than Clinton's News Network, right? It's the same thing. It's all propaganda one way or another. But Lauren Lister used to invite me on every now and then, and I liked appearing on her show because she actually let me talk instead of cutting you off after 13 seconds like CNBC does. And she had one of these guys that was, you know, one of the chief proponents of this MMT stuff, and she managed to get us in a two-up. He agreed to debate me on this. So he's going on and on about how, you know, essentially what Friedman would try to tell you, that, you know, it doesn't really make any difference because, you know, the government cannot go broke. It has this thing called a printing press. It can make all the dollars it wants. And of course, my, you know, my position has always been there's a difference between money and credit. Anybody can emit credit.
By the way, he would not have said that, because he would have said all you do is get inflation, you screw yourself the other way.
Well, but he, you know, my thing is that, it, as I've pointed out, money is only produced by making things that somebody else wishes to consume.
In value.
Words, adding value somewhere.
Yeah, value.
Right? The credit can be emitted by anybody. All you have to do is find somebody else that trusts that you're good for it to make something of value tomorrow. And the government has somewhat of a monopoly on this because they can tax you, and most people will not pull out a gun and shoot the tax collector. Okay, now someone might every now and then, but if you're a W-2 employee, you don't even get the opportunity because they take it right out of your check. So there's, you know, they have more credibility in that regard than anybody else for that reason. It's nothing more complicated than that. So this guy goes on and on and on, and on air I pulled a $20 bill out of my wallet, and I said, okay, so here we have $20, and now the government is going to just simply double it. And I just took it, tore it in half, and I said, so now I got $40.
Well, that's the truth, yeah.
And the thing is that and you know, that was the end of it right there. Lauren cracked up on air. And I was like, now see how simple this is? How many more times can we
The thing is that anybody that thinks about it for more than 10 seconds realizes that that's, you know, that's the reality. And that the delayed effects of doing this, because it doesn't, the inflation doesn't happen instantaneously, because it has to go through the system first. All right.
Funny you should mention that, because the number always was, in Friedman's class and everybody else's, if you increase the money supply a little bit in an attempt to move things forward or decrease it a little bit, in other words, you actually use monetary theory on its own, which now it's so discombobulated with fiscal theory, it's hard to figure out what they're even doing. But the number always was 5 to 7 to 8 months to work its way through the system.
Yeah, it's usually about six.
Six would be the number. If you were to pick one number, the number would be six. However, I'm wondering, Carl, as I look forward, or if I'm trying, or I look back, or whatever. I think that what they did during COVID, with the amount of money they poured in, where actually the banks had to kick the money back to the Fed at night, so because they had so much in the system, the system couldn't even absorb it.
Look.
I'm going to say that's way more than it might still be happening.
Right. It is. But Chief, let's take a vow here that we're gonna stop using the word money for those things and call it what it is. It's credit.
Well, it's
not money.
It's the Federal Reserve writing a check to buy a bond, and the money just appears out of nowhere.
It's not money.
Well, what is it?
It's credit. They spend exactly the same way. My $20 bill in my wallet spends the same way as my Discover card. But one of them is an obligation, and the other one is a surplus that I'm consuming.
Right. You say this all the time. Help me through the details, then, because I'm a detail guy. We've got to get the world dead here in a minute. But the Treasury goes out and sells the bond. All right?
Right.
And you buy it.
Right.
The Federal Reserve says, we got to increase the money supply for whatever reason. They buy it from you, and guess what? The money ends up in your brokerage account at PTI, wherever the hell it is. The money comes out of someplace. It's the bond is now on their balance sheet, but you can take that check. You can cash it. It's money.
Of course, I can cash it, but what I cashed was credit, and the difference is. Chief, I understand that. Look, this is the BS that gets sold by absolutely everybody, and it's nonsense. Because what ends up happening is that the government and the Federal Reserve did these things. Okay, no argument. I have a $20 bill in my hand because I cashed the check, right? So I have a $20 bill,
right.
and on the face of that bill, it says this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. Okay, so now I can go into the bar and I can buy a beer with it.
Carol, I'm sure you're right. It's the mechanism. But if it wasn't so cumbersome, it's the exact same thing as if they did run a printing press and gave you the 100 grand in cash. You got a check that you can cash. It gets to the same spot.
There's a substantial difference. Okay, and that is why we have, you know, 34, 35 trillion, you know, we're putting a trillion on every 3 months now or whatever it is. And that is this. When the Treasury goes out and sells that bond, in another 3 months or 6 months or a year, 2 years, whatever the tenor of that bond is, they're going to either have to fork up the cash that they originally got from somebody.
Right.
All right. Or they're going to have to roll it over at whatever the rate of interest is today. Not what it was 6 months ago.
Oh, I get it.
What it is now. So the problem is that if the market, and it's always a function of the market, if the market discerns that the value represented by that bond is going to depreciate by 5%, they're going to demand at least a 5% coupon.
Well, okay? Except for the last 10 years when people didn't do that.
Well, because you know what? People get drunk on stupidity. It happens all the time. What else is new, right? Look at NVIDIA.
All right, this is ongoing. We're both, well, whatever. I'm sure we're both right in our own little pockets here, but let's get to, since you made me dig up all these numbers, we got to at least talk about it for a few minutes. Where do you put... How do you even get your hands around world debt? I'm looking at this thing here where it says public debt, private debt, and then what the hell is the other one? household debt, public debt, and a non-financial corporate debt.
Right.
How do you even, when you look at a number, it's, what the hell's the number? $330 trillion. First of all, how does even the mind expansive Carl Dininger, how do you get your hands around how many zillions of dollars here we're talking about? I mean, what's, we get the number, for God's sake. I'm on the wrong page. No, that's the world, global. Anyway, I got one here that's, global debt was like $340 trillion or some number like that. What do you even do with that number, Carl?
Well, just remember that for every dollar of that, or whatever the denomination, you know, I mean, everyone likes to convert it back to dollars because we're the most common currency, right?
Yeah.
But when you look at that from a perspective, you have to realize that every single dollar of that debt, whatever it's actually issued in, it has a coupon associated with it. And that coupon is a parasitic drain on the production of value in the global economy. That parasitic drain has been increasing geometrically for decades, and all exponential series ultimately end.
The $322 trillion.
Well, that's
the number.
Drain. Right, that's a big number. Now let's say that the average tenor on that is, what's the rate? Call it 5%.
Yeah, that way you can use 10 and cut it in half.
Yeah, so
trillion a year, 16 trillion a year. That's a number.
16 trillion a year. Now take global GDP and take 16 trillion off of it, because that's the parasitic drain on the economy.
Well, but one person's loss is another person's income, right?
No, because it always shows up in inflation. When you do that by issuing credit, that's exactly balanced by the inflationary impact of doing it.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm with you.
All right? So no, it's not someone else's income, because that income is absorbed by the inflationary impact. That is parasitic drain on the economy. Thermodynamics is not a set of suggestions. There is no free lunch. And that's where the problem is with what we're doing right now in the United States, is that drain is with all exponential series, if you continue doing it on a forward indefinite basis, it goes vertical.
How do a couple of guys, not just a couple of guys, we got a bunch of people on the show, and a lot of people are smart people are on the show, obviously. How do you even drop that mentality back on a let's say from 2007 and even some before that when Greenspan moved the rates down to 1%? How do you take, let's call it 20 years rounded out, of what I consider to be bizarre world in terms of
you're right about that.
My monetary policy and so forth. How do you even, when I talk to somebody and I go, especially younger people are smart people, but I mean, it's hard for me to explain. I probably could have a pretty good chance with Ricardo because he actually listens. To say, Carl, what would your world be like if the interest rates were like 10% or 12%? And he'd say, what are you talking about? If you went to buy a hot dog stand, that you all of a sudden, and you wanted to borrow $1 million, it's $100,000 a year just back to the bank before you even sold hot dog one. And he'd probably say, wow, you mean it was actually like that? I've talked to these people. I was with a group last week. Two people work in the mortgage industry. Two people are attorneys. Two other guys work in, the trading industry. And they're talking about the Bears Stadium. I said, guys, we're talking $4.5 billion. We don't do anything for the right price here. Say $5 billion for this thing. The Bears, the biggest scam that they are, the family probably makes $200 million a year. So even if the state helps them, not at 1.5% or something, say they get this loan for 5% when it should be 10, because look at the risk on it. We're talking $300 billion a year, or million a year in interest. The team only makes 200.
Right.
What kind of business? Unless you get somebody else to pay for it, the other guy being the biggest chump on earth. But nobody even thinks that way. I could remember when the rates got to 15%, Carl, if you would have said, hey, Chief, you just won $1 million in the lotto. Great. But they're not going to pay you for 10 years. You'd almost say forget it.
Right. Yeah, what's left, right?
Yeah, what would that be? 200? I mean, it's still a nice chunk. You wouldn't say forget it, but it was
still a nice chunk of change.
Yeah. But it was, you know, what is it times 15% to the 10th power? What do you start with? 200, 180 or something? I mean, it wasn't just a number on a page. It was a way of thinking. We've totally lost that. I mean, do you think this administration even gives any kind of thought, or anybody for that matter? Trump didn't either when he lowered all the taxes. Again, I'm not against lowering taxes. To say, well, gee, what if we're paying 9% 10 years from now? I mean, if these guys are paying 9%, we would be talking about, if you look at the debt, $34 trillion, it's $3.4 trillion a year. Our total, what's the total take for the government? It's not even that, is it?
It's just, I mean, it's utterly insane what is, that people ever believed that you could do this on an indefinite basis. It's like any other exponential series. I don't care what it is. There has to be an end date. All right? Because you always feel great. You get that belly in the curve. It's one of the first things that I put forward in my book years ago.
Milton Friedman used to say it's like you get your first beer.
It's or the first hit of whatever the dealer's trying to hook you on, right? It feels fabulous. The bad side always comes later. Whenever you do this with an exponential series, you get this belly in the curve between the two lines. And that looks like a free lunch. It feels like a free lunch. And everybody loves it for that reason. And it's exactly the same thing as your first beer or your first hit of whatever drug the guy's trying to hook you on. The problem is that those two curves always cross.
Oh, yeah.
And if you do not stop, you're going to get destroyed by it. And it doesn't matter. I mean, look, if I go and I drink a 12-pack every single day, I'm going to end up with a shriveled-up liver and I'm going to die.
No, it'll be the size of Rhode Island. It'll be big.
Yeah. Well, I'm still going to be dead.
Yeah. Hey, well, I'm going to throw some of these numbers, and you can opine. You would think when we talk about these ratios, though, and we see like a danger sign, but I'm looking here at the world debt clock, okay? Now, the U.S. of A, has a population of 335, all right, allegedly. Our national debt is pushing $35 trillion. Our GDP is 28. So public debt to GDP is 89. It used to be. I mean, the GDP was way above the national debt. This is the recent crap we got going here. But now you look down the page here, you've got China, 14 and 17, so they're 81%, so they're a little worse than us. I'm sorry, a little better. Japan, I don't know, my question to Carl is, how the hell do these guys even survive? Their national debt's $13 trillion, their gross domestic product is 4.5. Their public debt to GDP is 300%. How does it? Germany's 79, UK is 108, so Germany's a little better than us, UK is a little worse, India is somewhat close to us, 96%, France 127, Italy's up almost by Japan. Well, no, they're 172, they're not even as bad as Japan. How's Japan going to work their way out of that, or Italy, or any of these places, much less us?
Well, what Japan did was absorb a huge bubble of inflationary pressure that blew up in their face, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? And here's the fun part of that, though. Go buy a house over there.
Well, their interest rate used to be 0.5%. Now it's just went through 0.9 today. What if they get to 2%?
But Chief, you're never going to get... Here's the problem. They repressed so much by doing what they did. They repressed so much actual product value expansion.
Yep.
All right. That you should see. You would be shocked at how cheap certain things like housing are over there. You'd be stunned. And part of what they did by doing this, by blowing this huge bubble, is they essentially blew up, because during that time, things in real terms were so ridiculously expensive nobody could afford them. All right. Well, guess what? People decided, we're not having any children.
Yeah.
Because we can't afford to have any children. Oh, what's going on over here in the United States right now? This, it's the same exact thing. And can I blame anybody for making that decision when they look at it? Say, you want how many thousands of dollars to have this child in the hospital? Then you're going to stab him full of whatever. If something bad happens, it's on me. I'm one bad event away from having my life destroyed along with the rest of my family. And oh, by the way, if I've already got one kid and I go ahead and have a second, which I kind of sort of got to do to replace myself and my wife, and something bad happens to the second one, it doesn't just ruin me, it ruins my other child.
Oh, yeah.
All right, now you either stop that nonsense along with the, oh, the median house is $400,000. And by the way, both myself and my wife can't afford that on a median wage. All right. You either stop that, which means those asset prices have to collapse, or you wind up with a problem because 20 years from now, 30 years from now, where are all the children that are going to enter the workforce and pay those taxes? They aren't going to exist. And no, you can't decide that you're going to do something about this in 10 or 20 years from now, because it takes 20 years to grow the kid. So you fix it today or you don't fix it at all. And we're going down a road much worse than Japan's, because the overhang that we've put into our system and the parasitic load is much worse than what they did 25 years ago.
I would say probably, what is the difference between, well, I should know the answer to that, I mean, I can't get a definition on this page. What's the difference between public debt to GDP and external debt to GDP?
Well, external is that owed to people other than other government things in some form or fashion, specifically those things that will not recycle back into your economy, like, for example, China.
Well, like here, public debt to GDP in China is 82%. We're 88%. Our external debt to GDP is 86, so almost the same as our public debt. China's external debt's only 17%. What is that?
Well, that's because the Chinese currency is not convertible, and therefore China essentially gateways it off, and you'd be crazy to own renminbi bonds.
Okay, so the UK is just the opposite. Their public debt's 108, external debt's is 300. How can it be more than the debt?
Oh, gee, we have all those friends over in what used to be the EU and the ECB and the IMF, and, you know, those guys were all kind of chummy, chow, chow, get it outside your country.
But it's debt held by who? Just somebody outside of Britain? But how can it be more than the debt? It's weird.
Well, because there's a bunch of stuff that, you know, we find...
Take
a look at our social... look at our forward promises in Social Security and Medicare.
So do we solve any of these worldwide debt problems other than to say they're pretty big?
I don't think the other guys are going to do anything to solve them, and I really don't care. But we'd better take care of our own, because when it all goes to hell, if you do not have the ability to produce value anymore because the parasitic drain is too great on your side, you collapse.
Well, one final question, even though I think we're probably running over here. In terms of, let's say the Fed is, when he keeps saying over time, I don't know if he's talking about a century or whatever, our Fed chairman, we're going to get back to our 2% target over time. Does that mean like when his grandkids got his job or what? Whatever, but I know that's a snide remark. But they've held the money supply pretty much flat for the last year. I mean, it's actually up a little bit, which isn't really railing against inflation as much as maybe you and I would. But you have China and Japan and other places, even though Turkey has really cut back on theirs, and some of the really bad actors have cut back on their increases dramatically, and their inflation's going down because of it. But how much does China and Japan leaking more money into their systems, how do you figure out how much of that's going to leak over here? I wonder if these guys keep it flat and everybody else keeps expanding their money supply, if we're still going to have inflation here, even though the Fed can say they're not causing it.
There is a problem with cross-border capital flows, and that there's only so much you can do about it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, typically what happens when countries start having that kind of a problem is they slam the door on it, and they put capital controls in of some kind, which is usually a counterproductive act. The real problem is in your own fiscal policy, but of course nobody ever wants to address that. So one of the reasons that the dollar has been, and dollar-denominated assets have been attractive, is that historically the United States has not done this. We historically have not slammed down capital controls. But there's nothing preventing the U.S. government from doing it.
Well, if somebody writes a check for NVIDIA stock from Japan, it enters the system, right?
Well, that's right. And but the thing is that there is nothing constitutionally preventing us from saying, for example, if you're Chinese and you own a business in America, sorry, your title is void. Constitutional rights do not apply to persons who are not U.S. citizens within the borders of the United States, period. End of conversation. And I know people argue otherwise, but that's...
But it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but Chief, you don't want that precedent because then it goes the other way.
I agree.
Okay, Saudi Arabia's laws apply in the U.S.
Oh, God. Anyway, Carl, thank you very much. Talk at you Tuesday. We have many, many topics all the time. SP Futures up 12. We've leaked back a little bit, but not much. We're still up. NASDAQ Futures up 43. Looks like maybe another up day. We'll be back on Monday to tell you all about it.
Bye, Puts.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.